Welcome to the Touring Car America Podcast. Where touring car racing comes to life. You'll get in-depth interviews with drivers, series officials, auto manufacturer reps, and unique personalities through SRO, America's Touring Car Division. This is the Touring Car America Podcast, and this is Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America Podcast 10 Questions, and I'm here with Chandler Hall. Chandler, you drive the car number 94, is that correct, in the touring car?
Yes, I do. The number 94 BMW M240 IR with Copart Bimmer World Racing.
Excellent. Well, we're going to jump into the questions. Question number one, what was the first car you ever owned?
That's a funny story. I've technically never really had a first car. My family had a couple cars when I finally got my driver's license, and most of the time I drive my mom's Escalade, but we always joke that it's bigger than a bus, so it wasn't my favorite car to drive, and sometimes when I caught my dad in a good mood, I'd ask him to drive his FL Mercedes.
I got you.
That had quite a bit of horsepower, so that may have been the first step into really liking cars and speed. And then later on, that turned into a Cayman, which is what I used to first start my track days and where I really caught the bug to go racing.
Gotcha. I always ask that question because most of the time people get hand-me-downs like the Escalade, so I can see that. Question number two. What did you want to be when you were growing up? Like when you were a kid, what did you want to be?
Well, I think like a lot of kids, I wanted to be a policeman. Uh-huh. Obviously, that was never pursued. But ironically, once I got my driver's license, I started seeing a lot of them, especially with their lights on behind me in the car. I think I got 12 tickets in 5 years.
Wow.
So I probably should have become a lawyer to help me get out of this.
Wow, yeah, 12 is a lot. That even breaks my record. So that's a new high mark for tickets when you're first starting to drive. So I don't know if that's something to be proud of or not, but it's definitely something to talk about.
Definitely.
Question three is, do you have brothers and sisters? And if yes, how many and where are you in the mix?
Yeah, I have two brothers and one sister. I'm the oldest. I think it was brother, sister, brother.
Okay.
And they kind of all do their own thing. Never really understood my whole passion for cars and racing until I actually started. And now they come to the track and they get really into it. And my he's a little bit fearless and impatient, but he's got a natural talent for driving too. So hopefully we'll get him into a car soon.
That's cool. Yeah. So they really didn't have much interest, couldn't understand it until they actually participated and saw what it was about, which is a pretty familiar story for someone, a family that hasn't gone racing before.
Yeah. My dad did some motocross when he was younger and excelled at it. But other than that, nobody in my family really ever got a racing bug or a car bug for that matter. So it was kind of weird. My sister just thought we were driving around in circles until she showed up to the first event at COTA this year and was really surprised.
Yeah, her exposure was probably just NASCAR ovals, right? So that's what she was associating it with, which I can understand totally. All right, question number four. What's your go-to order at your favorite restaurant?
It's probably sushi. Definitely a big sushi guy. I actually used to live in Mexico, so having the ocean right there and all the fresh fish that you could ever imagine, that kind of probably started that liking.
Where in Mexico did you live?
We spent some time down in Cabo for a couple years.
Yep, I love Mexico. I love Baja. I am a big Baja 1500, San Felipe 250 fan, so I spend a ton of time in Baja and love it down there as well.
That's what my youngest brother wants to get into. He likes the dirt racing.
Yeah, it's a good time. Question number five. What do you wish you knew when you started racing that you know now?
Well, given that it's just such a brief period, I'm still less than 2 years, I'm just amazed at how many small details there are. I never would have thought that what gear you're in, what line you take. I mean, if you're an inch or two off, it could spell disaster at some places. And then just kind of like car setup, camber, brake pad, ride height, everything like that. There's a science and an art to it. And so I'm still playing catch up and trying to accelerate my learning curve, being a sponge. So I've enjoyed it, but there's a lot of little details that I never knew existed.
Gotcha. Question number six. What's something that you failed at?
Probably following the speed limit, as evidenced to the mountain of speeding tickets I have in my file cabinet.
Right.
Other than that, maybe picking the right girlfriend, but that's another story for another time.
That sounds like a hilarious story. So we'll get some tequila from Mexico that I have, and we'll give that a shot at some point. Question number seven. If you could choose walk-up music like in baseball, what song would you pick for your walk-up music?
That's a hard one. I like all types of music, so I don't know if I can narrow anything down, but definitely 70s and 80s classic rock is kind of my go-to when I can't think of anything. I grew up listening to it because my dad loved it. Stuff like Queen especially. Those really get me going before a race.
So like We Will Rock You or something like that would be your walk-up music?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Another one, Bites the Dust, too. That's a good one.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. Very good. Question number eight. What do you do on a normal non-race weekend?
More racing stuff. Because I only started last year, really. I kind of spend every extra moment just soaking it all in like a sponge. I spend a lot of time on the simulator, watching other races from other series around the world, just trying to have a keen eye at everything and try to pick up some pointers here and there.
Cool. So you're just totally immersed. You're doing everything you can to try to get back up to, well, not back up to speed, but to get up to the higher levels as quickly as possible. I get it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Question number nine. What's your favorite book?
Probably The Life of Senna. It's just really interesting to see the behind-the-scenes part of one of the greatest racing drivers ever. So I really enjoy that one, and I'm not much of a reader. So.
Okay. Question number 10. When you're alone in your car, do you sing along with the music?
Absolutely not. No. I have no musical talent. I love music, but my talent there is severely lacking, as evidence of my try at middle school band. So haven't really taken it further than that.
So, like, are you tone deaf? Is it like tone deaf karaoke or what?
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair assessment of it.
Oh, man. Okay, so when you're telling me about your problems with women, I'm going to we'll have that tequila, and we'll definitely have to do some tone-deaf karaoke. That'll be hilarious. So.
It may take a lot.
All right, Chandler, really appreciate you being on the TC America Podcast 10 Questions. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Want to save money modifying your Mazda? Yeah, we thought you might like that. And now, thanks to the TC America podcast, you can save 10% off your next purchase with Corksport. Corksport offers a full range of performance engine, handling, and styling parts for the Mazda 3, Mazda 6, Mazda Speed 3, MX-5, and more. So how do you get the 10% off from your favorite podcast, you ask? It's easy to do. Get your favorite parts on corksport.com and enter the promo code TCAmerica19, all in capitals, and the magic happens. You save 10%. This offer expires October 1st, 2019, so don't wait long to save. Love, Corksport.
This is where touring car racing comes to life. We're back. We're back to the Touring Car America podcast with Joe Jordan.
This is the TC America podcast, and I'm here with Sally McNulty, the driver of car number 780, the Borla Exhaust Honda Civic Si in TCA. Sally, thanks for joining me. How are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
You are a very unique story, and I'm excited to learn about you today. So, Sally, you weren't brought up in a racing-type family. I have learned that you grew up on a farm in Missouri. Is that correct?
Yes, in Missouri, yes.
Or Missouri. What do they call it? Missouri?
Yes, I've heard that, and that could be true.
And now you live in Arizona and you work in Scottsdale, is that correct?
I live in Phoenix and I work in Phoenix.
Oh, you work in Phoenix, got it. My daughter lives in Phoenix too, so.
Oh, great.
Yep. And,
awesome.
And you're a service rider, I think, is that correct?
I am.
So that's very cool. So you don't have a golden spoon in your mouth. You weren't given a car by your parents to go race and have fun, and you don't have a war chest that your family gave you to go do stuff.
Definitely not.
Okay. So let's go back to the beginning then. You're a young child in Missouri. What was it like? I know from earlier you're the youngest of four in your household. And the only woman, so I imagine you were trying to keep up with the boys. Talk about that a little bit.
Definitely. Didn't have in Missouri, there's not a whole lot of racing there. If anybody who likes racing, it's NASCAR, and it's the Demolition Derby that happens on the weekend. Like, there's not really any form of professional racing or wheel-to-wheel or any track day. There's not even a track day about, like, close to where I was from. Honestly, there wasn't any kind of motorsport anything. So I personally had, I just thought cars were cool, and my brothers had motorcycles, cars, and all sorts of stuff, and my dad was all into, like, he had a truck that he wanted to make fast, like a diesel. So it was all about diesel trucks and things like that. So I really didn't have any, like, motorsport upbringing. I'm sure that, if we would have, in that area, my dad was like, I think that was full of my family, but we didn't really have any of that. I literally didn't get into, like, driving cars until, like, 2011.
Okay.
I am not the youngest person out there. I am 35. I turned 35 actually 2 days ago.
Well, happy birthday, and I would never have guessed you were that age.
A lot of people say that, so I don't really talk about my age, but I never really got into motorsports until about 2010, 2011. Actually, probably 2010. I had a friend that worked at a dealership, and he said, "Hey, Sally," I had moved away from something, and he said, "Hey, Sally, you should sign up for a track day. You really like cars, like the kind of stuff you should give it a shot." And I was like, "I don't even know what that is." So he showed me some videos on YouTube, and he said, "You should sign up for a track day." And I was like, "Oh, that looks like fun. I think I can figure that out." And I had a Chevy Cobalt, and I decided to sign up for a track day with a Chevy Cobalt. I had no idea what in the world I was even doing, and I was absolutely terrible, but I had a really good time. That was pretty much it.
So were you in Arizona at that point, or where were you at this
point? No, I actually lived in Wyoming then. I had moved from Missouri, and I moved to Wyoming.
You moved to the other racing metropolis.
Yes, I moved to the other that square state that nobody lives in, I moved there. And when I say that there's nobody lives there, they only have one, like, zip code. 307 is the only zip code for the entire state.
You mean area code?
So
area code, yeah.
It's very small.
Yeah.
And we used to go to Utah, where there was Taylor Motorsports Park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we would drive there, go to the track event there. And so I went to Miller Motorsports Park for many years. Drove and changed cars, modded other cars. I started out with a Subaru. I still have that Subaru. I have many Subarus beyond that.
Right.
Started modding Subarus, started doing, like, time trials, like, stuff. Really been doing time attack for a while. I started competing in time attack in, like, 2013 with Global Time Attack.
Right.
And it just started going from there. I started getting better. I started learning. I had a lot of friends. I met up with Channel Performance. They really hooked me up with the Time Attack team, really helped me with my driving. They started working with IG Performance, which is who I work with now with Subaru. And they've really propelled me to the next level. You know, I don't have to worry about the car as much, worry about being a driver, you know, focus on what is important, getting goals done, things like that.
Got it. So I'm going to make you go back a little ways now, though.
Okay.
So you're in high school, okay? We're going to stop the racing thing for a second. You're in high school. What type of kid are you?
When I was in high school, I had a 1988 Jaguar XJ6. The car sounded cool, but it was really cheap. It was like $4,000, and it was a pile of trash. It broke down every other day, but I loved it. It was real drive. I thought it was cool.
It was your car.
And I was the kid. That was me. I was the kid that loved cars. Like, I always wore band T-shirts. Like, I liked a lot of, like, alternative rock back in high school, so I was the girl who was kind of like still a girl, but kind of a tomboy girl, but like do stuff.
So like alternative rock, what would that be? What would be the bands that you'd always wear a shirt of?
The Beastie Boys.
Okay.
That would be something like that. I wasn't in sports. I didn't know what sports was. Didn't care about sports. Care about that stuff.
So music and old Jaguars.
Yes.
That was you in high school.
And other
basically.
Cool cars. I really wanted a Chevy Nova. I really, really wanted a muscle car. I really like.
You know, when I think of muscle cars, I actually don't think Chevy Nova. That's kind of interesting that you picked out the Chevy Nova. Huh.
I wanted like that. I wanted like a 383, and I wanted two speed, and I wanted to go fast.
I like it. So, after graduating high school, or finishing high school, what'd you do?
After finishing high school, I went to college for a little while. I realized that if I wanted to do this racing thing and if I wanted to make money, I can't do all of it. I can't afford it. So I started working a lot. I worked a couple jobs. I started working in a dealership because I realized that if you're good at your job, you can actually make decent money. And I was able to, make money to race and be able to work and do all of this at the same time. Because I didn't have any financial backing. I had no one. It was just me, and I had to figure it out.
Right.
But I knew that I really liked this stuff, and I wasn't going to stop doing it. So I just put my head down and said, I'm going to figure this out. And just started working really hard.
So that all happened once you were in Wyoming and you're working at a dealership in Wyoming. That's when the racing stuff first started. But how did you get to that point? So always into cars, always into those things. And what made you move to Wyoming?
This is the part I really want to talk about.
Okay, don't worry about it. That's fine. So you moved to Wyoming, you started working at the car dealership, and that's when you met the person who said, hey, you need to go do a track day. And that's where the whole car thing went overboard, and that's been your obsession for the last eight or 9 years.
I'm still friends with that person, too. It's really funny. His name is John, and I still talk to him a lot, and he still sends me pictures of, remember that first track day you went to?
And so the first track day, I'm sure you were like in like the beginner group. And what was it like? I mean, for you, somebody who never had done anything like that, you show up, you're in your Cobalt, and were there a lot of women involved back then when you were doing it? Or like when you're first, so you were the only, one of the only women in the beginning group. And what was that like?
I'm pretty sure I was the only girl there. And that was before even, like, at that point, Utah didn't have any NASA chapter, so it was just you sign up and just drive the track.
Right.
So I had no idea about braking points, shift points. I didn't know anything about that. So literally, I'm just like, I'm just going to try to figure this out. Like, I didn't know anything about apexes. I had not a clue. It was just me going, well, I guess I'll just drive around this road course looking thing with turns and tapes, figure this out. And I had a really good time. And I can tell that, you know, even though I had no idea what I was doing, I was getting faster.
Right, you were improving.
I was starting to figure things out. Like, okay, maybe I've gone too fast through there. Maybe I should slow down. Or maybe I'm slowing down too much here. I can go faster through there. Just, you know, just common knowledge. Just thinking, just, you know, common sense.
and
figuring things out.
The track day stuff, was it, did you have like downloads after you had a session? Like, did y'all come in and talk about the session and those kind of things? That was way less formal than that.
Oh yeah, it was just, you keep your car and just have fun.
I like it. So you know, these days, most of the track days, you have to do like a download where you talk about the session and all that kind of stuff. But you were really left where you were there on your own, figure it out. There wasn't wasn't any help. Wow. That makes it interesting.
Not a clue. That was before there was any kind of download session or, you know, instructor person. You literally, you're out, you put a helmet on and you just go drive.
Right.
Think, have fun. Help me figure it out. Here's a track map. I don't know if that's going to happen.
So at the end of the first day of your track day, what's going through your mind? Because I know the first time I went to a driver's school and the first time I went that evening, my head was just so worn out from the concentration. And I was so hooked that I just wanted to do it forever. So I was just curious to see, after your first day, what were you thinking? What were your thoughts?
That's very similar, very similar. I was like, well, I know that I'm not doing this right. I have a feeling that I am wrong at whatever I'm doing. I might be doing some things right, but I really like it, whatever I'm doing, and I need to figure out, like, it was clear, I want to do this again. But next time when I come back, I want to figure a few things out. So I want to do better next time and figure out, you know, and change whatever I was doing wrong.
Right.
Because, I mean, you could tell. I was like, well, I'm not as fast as that one guy. He passed me. So, but I'm obviously, I want to figure this out and I want to go faster, but I don't know what I'm doing. So I did ask some people's help, like, how do you get around that one corner without slowing down, you know?
Right.
Trying to, like, figure this out and ask people for help and whatever. And that was really before, like, I didn't have any GoPros in the car, so you wouldn't look at anything.
Right.
You were just kind of, like, talking to people, like, this corner right here, what is wrong here? How do I do that one?
Right. So you're looking for help any way you could, and you just knew that you enjoyed it and you enjoyed improving throughout the day. So you really wanted to figure out how to do it well.
Exactly.
Cool. And so now you're driving back to Wyoming. What is it, maybe like a 5 or 6 hour drive? Is that correct?
It's like 3.
Oh, it's less than that. Okay. So a 3 hour drive back. And are you just immediately thinking about, okay, when's the next track day I can do? Were you that hooked? Yeah, you were.
I was already hooked. I was like, I got to do this again.
Right. So you continued with the Cobalt. About when did you switch to the Subaru and start doing the time attack stuff?
Well, I was in the Cobalt for a while, and then I decided that Cobalt was not a good choice of a car. Like, I had no idea what a good track car was.
Sure.
And I was like, well, I know it's slow, and I know there's some things wrong with it, so maybe I should get a different one. So I went and got a different Cobalt, and I went and bought a Cobalt SX, the supercharged one, with, like, a better suspension. And I drove that for, like, a good year and a half. And I tracked and did all sorts of stuff. I did time trials in it. But I did notice a ton of people with Subarus, and I was like, you know, I was beginning to realize that I was driving the car, but there wasn't really any aftermarket Cobalt.
Right.
Like, I would like different suspension stuff. Like, what do they offer? Or I'd like something great. I'd like a little bit more powerful. I'd like this. Or I'd like that. But there really isn't a whole lot of options. But I would see people on these Subarus, and I was like, hey, they have everything. They have, you know, they have different suspension. They have foam arms. They have all this stuff. And I'm over here like, I can't do any sense. So I started looking for a Subaru. It took me almost a year to find one. And then I finally found one. And I was like, I'm going to buy it. And I bought it. And I still have that car.
That's great.
So I started doing stuff to it. I had it for 3 weeks. And 3 weeks later, I was out there on the rain shop trying to figure this new car out.
So you started to modify it, and probably because, you know, you're a young woman and you're modifying your car, all of a sudden people are like, wait a second, this is different, right? This is interesting. Let's,
That was a big thing that I wanted to do. Like, you know, I worked in a dealership. I understood how some of, like, mechanics work, but I wanted to do the stuff myself. the biggest thing is, like, if I'm going to drive a car, I want to learn what I'm replacing. I want to know why it works, how it works, when it works, like, why it works, the difference between me changing this and changing that. Like, I wanted to learn all those things because I'm like, if I'm going to do this, I don't know that I have anybody to help me. So I want to be able, if I have a problem, I can change the brake pads if I run out of brake pads. Or I want to know how to, you know, change whatever if I needed to, like a control arm, a ball joint, a tie rod. You know, if I had a problem, if I saw something happening, that I could be like, or if I have something happen in the car, like heavy vibration, I'd be like, well, the front, it might be these items, because that's the front of the car. I want it to be knowledgeable. Because that can translate, if you know about your car, you can translate if something happens, where you can start. So I was, like, really adamant about wanting to, like, replace the car, like the parts of my car myself. I really was adamant about that. And that, like, opened my eyes to like, wanting to drive better, because, therefore, I knew what was happening. And I could adjust things, and I could, you know, change things on the fly if I had a problem with the car. That was a big thing that I really wanted to learn. And people really, like, really, I got some, like, mad respect from people for that because it wasn't just me just trying to figure this out. I was trying to put in the depth of feedback and going and learning, actually, what was going on with the car.
And that's, you know, that's really great. I wish more people would take that approach. You know, these days it seems like a lot of people just use setup shops and those kind of things, which is fine. Everyone's got to do it their own way. But I love the fact that you really wanted to learn the car and you wanted to know how to do it yourself, be self-sufficient, to understand all the changes that you made and how that affected the car and how it affected your driving. I think that's really, really great. So
thank you.
Yeah, so the Subaru, you start modifying it, and when did you decide you want to do a time attack? Because a time attack is, like, global time attack's a much higher level than just a track day. So I'm trying to understand the development that you went through to get to that point. So the Subaru was the first big step, right? So getting the Subaru and starting to modify it was the big step to on that road. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, you're good. I got the Subaru. It was pretty much stock. Didn't have a whole lot done to it. So I started driving the car, and I realized that I was getting pretty quick. And I did a lot of, like, NASA time trial stuff. So I was modding the car to, like, become faster. Like, okay, I'll do one thing. I didn't have a lot of money, so it was a very slow process. You know, I was getting quicker and quicker and starting to win, like, places, like, podiums during, like, a time trial for NASA. I was like, I'm not that fast. Like, I feel like I was getting quicker, and I was understanding the car, and I was able to, like, you know, dial in and talk about, you know, breaking plates, turning in, hitting apex, and things like that, and I was able to actually relate to that. And I was getting pretty good, and actually, and naturally decided to make me an instructor for, like, new female drivers, where I was, like, riding the car with them. We would talk about, you know, turning. We would talk about, you know, braking and apex and things like that, because whenever a female works with another female, it's less stress. We have and not saying that it's anything bad, but when a girl gets in a car and they really don't know what's going on and it's a new track day and they're sitting in with a guy, not saying that it's bad or anything, but sometimes you can be a little intimidated and then you're, like, nervous, then you make mistakes. So I did a lot of female driver, like, orientations on the track. Like, hey, you know, and showing them where to sit, where to place their hands, where to put their mirrors, talking about braking zones and blah, blah, blah. And I had a lot of, you know, like, wouldn't say like a client per se, but, you know, female drivers. And he really hit it off, and I really loved it. It was a great time, and I started getting a lot faster, and people were like, have you ever thought about doing, like, maybe like a global time attack event? And I was like, I always followed them on social media, but I didn't think I was ever at that level. So, like, why don't you try it? Or, like, go women, you sign up for it, why don't you give it a shot? You don't know, you know? So, you know, you may not be that fast, but, like, go make some waves. I was like, okay. So I did. Like, 2013 was my first event, Global Time Attack. I went to Chuckwalla Valley Raceway. And I had never been there before. And it was in June. And it was horribly hot. And I had a great time. I had a fantastic time. I'd never been there. I didn't do as well as I wanted to because, well, I'd never been there before. And I was pretty nervous. But I had a pretty good time.
Yeah, and I'm one of the crazy few that loves Chuck Walla. It's, you know, I love Chuck Walla. I love that track. I love that area.
Great.
Because it's out in the middle. So for people that don't know, Chuck Walla is a smaller track. It's about an hour and a half east towards Phoenix from Palm Springs. So it's literally in a place called Desert Center.
2 hours from there.
Yeah. So it's in the middle of nowhere. They have been slowly building up the facility. So now it's pretty nice. But I was there maybe 5 weeks after it opened. So they had no facilities. But I loved it because you're out in the middle of nowhere. The stars there at Chuck Walla are like
beautiful.
Yeah, are like no other place I've ever been in my life. So anyway, I love Chuck Walla.
One of my favorite things is going there and getting there before the sun rises.
Yeah.
Like, I go there, I've gone there quite a bit now. But one of my favorite things is going there and getting there before the sun rises and being in the paddock area and the sun rises, because you have like all of the desert and you see the beautiful like pink and yellow and orange sky with like all the cactus silhouettes. It's like it's beautiful. It's just gorgeous out there. I love that track.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Don't go there in the summertime.
The sunrises at any racetrack are some of my favorite times because it's just quiet. You know, you can see that, you can see the influence of the track, but it's just a beautiful place to be. So I can totally relate. I just had to jump in there. A lot of people who listen to this are not here in Southern California, Arizona, so they don't know Chuck Walla. So I just wanted to explain. Think of it as the middle of the desert, and then think about it going even farther into the desert. That's where Chuck Walla is. But it's a really cool place with an unbelievable view, but it can get ridiculously hot there.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you. So you went out to Chuck Walla for your first global time attack. Never been there. Probably had to learn the track a bit and do all those things, but you enjoyed it, I guess.
Oh, yeah, it was a blast. I had an absolute blast. And all these people I've been following on the internet for a while. I follow you on the internet and I've seen you before. And now I'm at a track event with you. And I followed you for a while. Like, it was just cool. It was really neat that, you know, and I was hooked at that one point. I was like, I signed up for one event, and I was like, I'm never going to miss another one. I'm going to go to all of them. Like, I'm just going to go. Like, I don't care how much it's going to cost. I'll figure this out. Like, we'll figure it out. And from then on, I was hooked. I've been going to Global Time Attack events ever since then.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that the internet, right? Your social media and those things. So did you say that you were following people who are running Global Time Attack and social media? Because you have quite the social media presence now. Were you doing it back then as well?
I didn't have the media presence that I have, like, now. But I was definitely following the people that, you know, Global would, you know, talk about their drivers.
Yeah.
That they had. And it's really cool because I went and signed up to the events, and I'm, like, seeing all these people that I, like, would see that they're talking about their drivers, and I was, like, sitting in the paddock with them. I'm, like, this is so cool. Like, I've seen you on the internet, and I've never met you, but now we're at the same place, you know?
So think about how you've come, you know, where you've come from. So you were the person who was so excited to meet someone you had read about or seen on social media. And I see it now, right? Like at Grid Life, all these people are so excited to meet you and talk to you. I mean, that's, what, 4 years later from your first Global Time Attack, when you were excited to meet these people, and now the people are excited to meet you. I mean, that's got to be really gratifying.
It's really humbling, honestly. I still am in shock sometimes if somebody wants to be like, Donnie, I still want to meet you. And I was just like, you want to meet me? Like, why would you want to meet me?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes, like, it's just seriously humbling. And it, like, you know, I'm like, you're a little bitchy sometimes. And it's like, what? You want to meet me? That's so cool. Like I'm just pumped to meet them.
Yeah.
Like, sweet, man. Like, awesome. Thanks for coming by. Like, let me give you some posters. You want some food? You want a drink? You want to hang out? Like, come sit down. Have a seat.
But see, I love that about you because you are very, you know, all of us think that way, right? I mean, why would anyone want to meet us? You know, why would they want to do those things? And, you know, I was lucky enough, my son raced in World Challenge, and he ran the TCB class, which I don't know if you know, but that was before TCA. And he won his first race at Utah. And I'll never forget that kids, when he went into Victory Circle, were asking for his autograph. And one of my favorite pictures I have of all time, he's signing a kid's hat, but it's like a Cookie Monster hat. And
oh, my God.
I know, it's so great. And then after the race, he said to me, he goes, Dad, it's incredible. I was those kids. I was those kids signing, you know, I was sitting there signing their autographs and I was like, oh my God, this was me not that long ago.
Yeah.
So I imagine you have that same type of feeling when people come up and they're just so excited to meet you. You almost don't know how to handle it because
I'm like, you want to talk to me? And you're like kind of around or something. You know, it's really humbling and it makes me just want to work so much harder and, you know, and just remember that, you know, anybody can get anywhere. You know, you don't have to, you have to work hard, but you can do this. And people tell me all the time, I want to do the things you do. But let me tell you, like, you know, just go out and drive your car, sign up for a class date, just start driving. So you don't have to be spotting your car, you don't have to be doing all this stuff, you don't have to have a full-blown lifestyle. Go sign up for your, you know, class date, you know, the auto that you have or whatever you have. Just go, have fun. Like, just go and drive. That's what you need to do.
Just get started, right?
Look at me. Huh?
Just get started. That's what they have to do. They just got to get started.
That's my biggest thing. I tell people all the time, just sign up. That's the best thing. Sign up. Go do a NASA day. Go do an SCTA day. Get an instructor. Just sign up. Just go do it. You know, you don't need this, that, or whatever. Just go.
And you don't have to have
a lot of people.
You don't have to have a golden spoon in your mouth, but you do have to get creative, right? You do have to figure out.
Just be creative.
You know, you have to maybe get another job. You have to find a way to make additional money. You know, those kind of things to help support your quote unquote habit. But as you can see, it's worth it for you. I mean, I know how hard you've worked with all the different things that you've done, and I love seeing the people come up to you wanting to meet you because you have such a, I don't want to say shocked look, but just like, oh my gosh, these people want to meet me look on your face.
Yeah.
And I just,
like, what?
Yeah, I just love it so much. So.
Well, I just try to keep the attitude because I ain't no one special. I am just a regular average chick who's done, you know, working a job. And I always try to talk about that is that, you know, I have a job. I have, you know, I'm working. I get off work at 7 o'clock. I hop on a plane. I might fly somewhere and get a red eye and get there at 2 a.m. And then I'm at the traffic fix. Like, you have to make, you know, and I have to make sacrifices. You know, I may not be able to buy everything I absolutely want, but, you know, I you got to make this work. If you want it hard enough, you know, you'll get there. Nobody got anywhere sitting around. That's for darn sure. And that's, like, the biggest, like, driving force that I can say, and I definitely didn't get anywhere just on my own. I've had a lot of people, like, I've had a lot of good partnerships, and I've had a lot of good sponsors, and it's friends who just, you know, wanted to help out, or, you know, they're a listening ear, I have a question. Definitely, you know, did not get where I am by myself, and I definitely want to thank you for those people, because if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't.
And the bottom line is, you just got to get out and do it, like you said. And there are sacrifices. There are hard times as well as good times. And you question yourself all the time about it, right? But the bottom line is it's enjoyable, and it's how you choose to spend your time. And you know, that's part of what this podcast is about, is to let people know that, you know, a lot of people at the race weekend see the GT3 cars and GT4 cars, and, you know, those are dream cars for most of us. But in touring,
it's a dream car for me.
Yeah, but touring car is obtainable, right? I mean, almost anyone can go run touring car, and everyone who runs touring car is from totally different backgrounds. And when you came into the season this year, you had virtually no wheel-to-wheel experience. You had a lot of global time of pack, tech, and those kind of things where you're out there driving and you're passing cars and you're doing those things, but not the whole race strategy of. How am I going to pass this person, or how am I going to compete with this person for 40 minutes? So I've watched you this year with much interest, and I've seen you grow a tremendous amount.
Definitely.
But I want to talk about that. You going into COTA, which was the first race weekend. I know you had done some testing, and you went to Skip Barber Racing School and those kind of things. But what were your expectations going into COTA for the first race weekend of the year?
My biggest, I had a goal for myself. My goal was don't crash and don't take last. And we got both of those. We were good. We didn't do any of those things, so we were awesome. I will say that I was nervous. For one, I'd been at COTA once before, and I had never driven that car at COTA. I was terrified. And I was like, I don't want to look like an idiot out here. Just all these, the new series, new people. I didn't really know anybody. It was scary. It was difficult. But I was, and the first event, we came and went, and I realized, I was like, you know, it's very clear what I need to do here. Like, I wasn't really sure what to think about how to go into that weekend. I was, like, trying to have a level head. But after the weekend was over, I was very clear what I needed to do. So I was like, I have to figure this out, and I have to figure this out now.
So that was the clarity that you had, is you got to figure it out. Is that really what it was?
Yeah, I hope I can figure this out. There was no, I'm going to figure this out. Like, we're going to get it. Like, going to work hard at it. I went and bought a simulator. I went and signed up for a track event in a Honda Fit, a front wheel drive Fit.
Yep.
I went to a Good Life, and they have a Honda Fit boot that the owner of Good Life has. And I took his Fit out for a whole day, and I just wailed on that car. So I understood front wheel drive. Like, I was like, I am not leaving so I can put down a fast lap time in this little car. I was like, I am. So they have, like, a full, Good Life has a whole, like, thing called the Fit Challenge.
Yeah, I know about that.
There's a whole bunch of people with Fit go and run the track and be full of Fit and try to put down the fastest time. And I was like, if I can figure this Fit out, I can figure out the Fit. Like, I'm going to go drive this car. And I drove the wheels off Fit. Literally had to change tires.
You know, they
like,
say
I just kept driving and driving and I was like, if I figure out the front wheel drive, I can figure out the track. Yeah. I was like, we'll figure out the front wheel drive. So I just drove it, and I actually, me and the other guy put down the fastest lap times that anybody had ever put down, like at Mid Ohio at it.
That's great. I mean, the slow car fast is something that kind of makes the rounds now, but I truly believe it. If you can drive a slow car, like a Fit or a Miata, some of those cars that are momentum cars, if you can drive those cars fast, I really believe you can drive anything fast. So
I
think that was a good strategy for you to use. And yeah, I think I call it Spec Fit, something like that, in Grid Life. I've been to a few Grid Life events. It is a very cool class. And, you know, they get 8 to 12 Honda Fits out there all ripping around together, usually embarrassing other cars, too. So that's half the fun.
True.
So,
I got to pass a few people. It's been fun.
Yeah. So going into Virginia at VIR, I tend to, you know, I work for the series. Some of you guys know I do the I've kind of fallen into helping Gino Carini with the PA, and we added Sirius satellite radio. So now I'm doing that with him. But I would do whatever the series needed. So at VIR, I was actually riding passenger in the NSX pace car, doing the radio communications between the pace car and the stewards.
Yeah, you were riding with Mike.
Yeah, I was riding with Mike. And I had, you know, we have a lot of downtime. So we're talking a lot about you and your progression.
Oh, boy.
And it was great. No, he was so enthusiastic and so positive and so excited about how quickly you were learning the racecraft part of it. And he said that you had the raw speed and, you know, it's just a racecraft that you were developing. And lo and behold, in the first race at VIR, you score your first point. So what was that like?
I did. That was intense. Like, I was super... in time attack, that's the one thing you don't want. You don't want cars around you in time attack, that's for sure, because you're like, that's going to mess up the lap time. So you try to give yourself space so you don't actually, like, get close to any car, which is the exact opposite of the wheel-to-wheel racing seat, like, game or idea. So getting close proximity to cars was very, very kind of nervous to me. I was always afraid that I'm not going to see someone or I'm going to hit them or what have you. I was really nervous about that. But then I realized, like, in the process of VIR, that the closer you get to someone or drafting someone, you actually can go faster because there's a graph or you're next to someone or you're following them and trying to chase that person down that actually will make you faster. I was like, it was like a whole swirl. So, and I was like, oh, my God. It totally makes sense now.
Yeah, so it's just a different mindset. I hadn't thought about that. And, you know, I haven't met that many global attack drivers, but I didn't realize that they wanted to get space. I mean, I understand getting space so you don't get messed up by another driver and those kind of things. But when you're in wheel-to-wheel, you're always around another car. So that's really interesting that was such a big thing and such a big change for you. I never thought about that.
It was a huge change. And I was really nervous about getting close to another car. I was like, well, what if they spin out? What if they hit me? Or what if I, whatever? And it was a big, you know, it was in my head. But then I realized that them being close to me, it actually makes you faster. And then you're chasing someone down. It gives you a goal, but you always think about goals. It gives you the goal to work towards. You see that guy up there is like two corners ahead of you? Go chase that guy down. Like, make him your target. Go for it. Like, push the car. Go for it. Brake later. Dive in, you know, go for that pass. And it was like, wow, this is really cool. I really loved it. And I realized that I was catching up to people. I was like, yes. And it's really been a real eye-opener. Real eye-opener. And it really made me a better driver, 100%.
Yeah. And I did know, you know, I learned a lot because the pace car, before we would go lead one of the fields, he'd always stop by and just real quickly check in with you, which yes. I thought was great, yes. You know. So you have
he's the best.
Yeah, so you have a nice partnership with Skip Barber, and they've been coaching you through this whole
awesome
transition to wheel-to-wheel racing. And yeah. I think it's definitely helped you. And I think, you know, your attitude is probably what gets you the most things, right? You're not afraid to just jump in. And yeah, there's times that you're scared and you're a little nervous, of course, but you're not afraid to just go for it. And, you know, your attitude of I'll just figure it out is so important. There's, you know, you say that you're not special, or you said you're not special. Why would people want to meet you? But 99 out of 100 people don't have that attitude. They don't say, I'll just figure it out. They just don't do it because they don't have the confidence. So I think you're very special.
I don't have the confidence, but I'm just like, well, I'm going to sink or swim, and sinking is not an option. So we better figure it out.
Yeah, you put yourself out there, and everyone can relate to that. You know, everyone, I don't care who you are, if you're the best driver in the world, best race car driver in the world, you still have self-doubt. And you have to be able to put that aside, go out there and perform. And if you're not the fastest or not the best, come up with a plan to make yourself better. And I think you're executing that perfectly. So we move ahead. And I think at Portland, you had one of your best finishes. And also one of your worst finishes. So I want to hear about both those things.
You did. That was terrible, man.
Yeah, so for some of you, so for those of you that don't know, we usually run two races per weekend, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. So Sally's Saturday race was, I believe, her best finish of the year. So let's talk about that positive Saturday race.
That Saturday race was great. We had a pretty good start. We lost a little bit of ground right off the start of the race one. So I was right behind one of the mini supers, which is known to be a really fast car. So I was like, I tried to position myself because I knew if he was in a fast line and I just stuck to his bumper like glue, that I would just be good. So I got behind him, stuck to his bumper like glue. He got a flat right in front of me. And everybody seemed to get around me, and I couldn't get out behind the car. I got stuck behind the car. I was like, no, like, my plan got spoiled. I was like, find a car. You know he's fast. Stick to him. You stick to his line. You hang on to him. We'll be doing good.
And you did get a good start. I mean, you were, I want to say you were fifth or something like that. And it was Mark Pombo who you were following, I'm pretty sure.
Yes.
And
no.
Yeah, and I remember you getting, if you can imagine on a racetrack, so she's there right behind the mini and they're moving and she gets a flat and there's literally a freight train of cars going by and there's really nothing she can do. She could go in the grass, but that's going to be worse. So she just has to wait for a hole to jump in and get back in the race. So that's kind of what you're going through, right?
I was going through that, and then I did fight my position. I did end up fighting my way up pretty far up through the line. And then there was a full course caution. So we went back, good and had a restart. And I think this is my time. This is my time to shine. Now that I was kind of, I wasn't where I wanted to be, but now that we restarted, I was like, that's going to bunch everybody back up again, and I can fly. Well, so essentially what I did. I took the restart, and I was like, regroup, let's go for it. Because, you know, time number two, so I got everything back together, and we ended up finishing sixth. We were chasing down. I was really close, right behind 4th and 5th. Like, they were in my grasp. And, of course, the end of the race came. But I think if we got a few more laps, we would have been right in there, you know, battling for position. And I was catching up to them quick.
Yeah.
So I was like, I know that I could have been up there, but, you know, race happens. And I'm super pumped about the finish. Like, everybody wants a better finish, but honestly, I was pumped. I was super pumped. I was like, never done that before. It gave me a lot of confidence. It made me really figure out that, you know, you can do this. Just go in there and dive in there and do your driving. Keep your eyes up, keep your head up, and just follow that guy and go for it.
And racing,
like, don't be scared.
Racing has a funny way of, so she had her best finish on Saturday. She's full of confidence going into Sunday. She knows she's going to be able to stick it on the box, get it on the podium, right? Your confidence is there. And racing has this funny way of just slapping you around sometimes and saying, look, pal, you know, you're not quite there yet. You may get there, but we're going to test you. We're going to make sure you really want this enough. So talk about Sunday's race.
So, mind you, I should probably tell you, my boyfriend is the guy in my radio, in my ear the whole time. He does have a competition license, and has done some Honda Challenge races. But he's very fast. He's also a race car driver. He does time attack, and he's extremely fast. Like, anything that he would tell me, I know that he is right. Goes over my data, but in my ear, talking about, you know, green, 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 go, 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 stay on that guy, like, yelling in my ear. And I'm like, okay. So I'm like, we got another finish. So we got another fifth finish. Like, we started in fifth. We get around the corner. I get to, like, corner number three, and I spun. And I was like, oh, that was, like, my best start. Like, I don't know how I managed to, like, weave through everybody and get right up in there. And I could see all the front runners. And then I spun in corner three. I was like, what an idiot. So, of course,
there goes all that confidence you had just gotten the night before, right?
I was like, what? I was so upset. I was like, whatever. So, but we actually got another restart on race two. And I was like, we're going to try this again. We did this yesterday. We were just fine. So I did a pretty good restart. We were out after some cars, and we came down the front straight, and I was neck and neck with the CRZ, and I got past them. And he was definitely in, like, behind my quarter, so I had it going in, and I heard something from the rear, like, tire lock up, and going into corner one, and someone from behind, another BRZ, was trying to cut the other guy off to my left, trying to, like, you know, follow me through the corner, but he broke way too late and just nailed the back of my car and spun me around. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is the worst race ever. And I get it. I understand what he was trying to do. It happens. We all make mistakes. Like, we're all great out there. We'd all take first place all in a row. So, but, yeah, unfortunately, I learned some, you know, things happen.
So racing slapped your confidence around a little bit. But since then, we're heading to Watkins Glen. I'm actually heading there tomorrow. You're probably heading there tomorrow night. So, so we're heading to Watkins Glen. But you've done some global time attacks in the meantime, right? Because you're so bored, you don't have enough to do. You've run probably three or four weekends of grid life and other things I've seen on your social media. So you did really well at grid life in Atlanta. So talk about that a little bit.
I did. I had my Subaru out there, and we also have the Honda Civic. So we were running two cars all weekend, and it was a blast. In the Subaru, we had a little bit of problems the first day. We had some issues with the car, not having enough power, and it was really breaking up on acceleration. So we took the logs of the car and sent over the tuner, and he was able to fix those things. The car was running full grit, so it was breaking up on acceleration when you go on shift. So he sent it back to tune, and put it back on the car. We did an oil change to get, so sometimes you might have, when it runs too rich, you don't need the oil. So we cleaned that all out of there, put a thicker oil in there. Car ran like camp. But unfortunately, we didn't get a whole lot of time for the weather. So we all that really got like a really good session was the last session of the last day. So Saturday night, me and my boyfriend just poured over my video, and he's like, "Give me some time. Here, 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 and here." He's like, "Fix those things really fast." I'm like, "Okay, cool." So I did exactly what he said, because always right on the money. And once again, he's in my ear again, you know, telling me, he's like, "Knocking more time out of it. You're knocking more time out of it." He's like, "Come on, keep going." And I had like 2 laps left in the session. I botched the 1 lap, and I was like, "Ugh." He's like, "Hey, your last chance. Like, just do it." And a calm came over me. I was like, "I have this. Hey, we got this. We got this." And I just drove the car, and we actually broke the all-wheel drive street mod record, but faster than any other all-wheel drive car that's ever been there, which I owned that record, so I broke my own record.
Right.
Actually, somebody had broken it earlier that day, that weekend, but we went back. We took it back again. And we took a second place overall, only lost by like 0.3 seconds. He did a 132.5
right
at Road Atlanta.
That's awesome. And you also ran the, they call it the GLTC or something like that, I think.
Yes.
The touring car race.
Yeah, we took the Civic out, and a little backstory. I don't just drive the Civic unless at the World Challenge event. So I don't get a lot of seat time. So I'm trying to figure this car out, figure out these tracks, do all of this at the same time. And I talked to Honda, and I said, "You know, I'd really like to drive this car so I could get running the car a little better. You know, I've learned front wheel drive, but I want to just put a lot of laps down in the car. They have a touring cup car class. You know, we do as a wheel to wheel race, and I would really like to go take the Civic in it." And they were like, "Yeah, I agree. You should go." So we brought the Civic to Atlanta. I drove it for 3 days, and we went. We did qualifying in 3 races. The car is in the World Challenge trim, it's not very competitive in their rule set.
Sure.
But we did have some, like, stellar lap times down.
Right.
Like,
well, to, you know, the whole goal was for you to get to know the car better. So having three days and doing those things, it sounds like you achieved your goal for sure.
Definitely. My boyfriend was, again, once in my ear. And it's so funny because, like, the first couple of days, we were doing okay times. And then on Sunday, the last day, I get out of the car and he's like, "Why did you fuck all that time? Why were you doing that on, like, Friday?" I'm like, "I don't know. It just been this quick, okay?"
Thanks, dear. Just be happy, okay? Jeez. Killing me.
It was really funny, though. But he was right, though. He's like, "I don't care what happened. I'm just glad you found it."
Oh, good. Good. So, let's talk about what do you hope your future holds in racing? Where do you want to be next? What's the next big thing for Team Sally?
Oh my goodness. You know what? I've had this question before, and it's hard to say. Because honestly, I never thought I would be here where I am now. Like, I did never imagine myself would be driving in a professional race series in a Honda Civic and being on track with people with so much more talent than me. Like, I never thought that I would ever get to where I am.
Well, there is talent, but there's determination. I don't think anyone's got more determination than you. And you are top 10 in points now, so that's pretty cool.
I just want to be the best I can be. And if I have no idea where it's going to take me, but I'm just working hard to get wherever I can go.
That's a great answer. And let everyone know who isn't part of Team Sally how they can follow you. Where can they follow you on social media? I know that you sell crew shirts and other things to help support your racing. So talk about that a little bit. Talk about your partners.
So I'm on social media. I'm mostly on Instagram under Snail Performance Sally. And it's pretty much a vlog of my life and the things that I do, from being at work to racing cars to
the corgis,
playing with the dogs. The corgis or whatever I'm doing, and I do also have a car project side deal. I also like to work on and build cars.
Yeah, you're
so
building a 240SX right now, right?
I am. I'm building a 240SX. It is, I bought a $1,000 project. It ended up being a total dud. It needs a lot of work, and it's not like something I have to finish soon. But it's something that I do like to work on because I find that therapeutic and just, you know, relaxing. It's sure. so nice to get something that's kind of junky and then you turn it into something nice. And, you know, it's refreshing to see the things that you did. So that's what I also like to do on the side. I also like food. You probably see a lot of food on there. but that's me. That's me in a nutshell. I am on Facebook, or you can follow me on YouTube. I do have a YouTube channel where I do a lot of, like, car placement. Hey, let's take this off. I'll tell you some stuff about it. Let me tell you, you know, why this is good and stuff like that.
And that's so, that's all under Snail Performance Sally. Is that how they find you?
Yes.
Okay.
Snail Performance Sally.
Excellent. Sally, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us and get to know you, hear your story. It's very refreshing. I'm rooting for you to achieve whatever you want to achieve, and looking forward to seeing you at Watkins Glen, and let's see you improve on that performance from Portland.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and of course, I look forward to seeing you and everyone and having a good time.
That's what life's about. Thanks again, Sally. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. I'll see you soon.
Bye-bye. Want to save money modifying your Mazda? Yeah, we thought you might like that. And now, thanks to the TC America podcast, you can save 10% off your next purchase with Corksport. Corksport offers a full range of performance engine, handling, and styling parts for the Mazda 3, Mazda 6, Mazda Speed 3, MX-5, and more. So how do you get the 10% off from your favorite podcast, you ask? It's easy to do. Get your favorite parts on corksport.com and enter the promo code TCAmerica19, all in capitals, and the magic happens. You save 10%. This offer expires October 1st, 2019, so don't wait long to save. Love, Corksport.
Thanks for listening to the Touring Car America podcast, where touring car racing comes to life. Please like, comment, and subscribe to the show. And for more series information, go to the series website at tcamerica.us.